Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Now, in Voices from the Ape House, Beth Armstrong offers a behind-the-scenes look at the complicated social lives of Western Lowland gorillas. The memoir traces Beth Armstrong's love and fascination for animals from her childhood to her work with these captive primates as an adult. Well, she's here to tell us a little about her book. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So, let's go back to your childhood then. Have you always been an animal lover?
I think I was. I think, you know, I was raised in a time where, as children, we spent all our time outside. There was only one car in the family. And so if you wanted to go to school or up to the pool or down to the park or out and play in the woods, you went out walking in the neighborhood. And I think simply being exposed to the seasons and listening to nature and watching nature, I think you cannot help but be somehow fascinated by it when you're raised in that environment where you're on a daily basis, you're simply walking around in nature, even in suburbia.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was brought up in exactly the same time, and it was happy times, healthier times. I think we were out more than we were in.
You know, I you may bring this up later, but that is something I do talk about in the book, that because we were a generation of kids that you had to find your way through the neighborhood, the labyrinth of the social society of your local neighborhood. You had to figure out which kids were the nice kids, which were the ones you weren't really comfortable around, who were your brother's friends, who did you feel safe with, who was fun to be around. That's all a part of a normal primate upbringing.
Right.
And I think because we were outside so much without adult supervision, our parents were busy. They were off doing their thing, raising other kids or going to work. And so we were left to our own devices to sort of navigate and develop our social skills, which I think is a normal part of any primate behavior or any primate society.
Yeah, they're so like us, aren't they? They're so like humans.
They are in so many different ways. I think gorillas, for me in particular, they have aspects that so mirror us. They can make us uncomfortable by that. They can touch our hearts. They can make us laugh. They have such individual personalities. They're invested in their young. They put a lot of time and effort into raising their kids. They're great parents. And I think if you ask anyone who watches a group of gorillas that has a lot of infants and a lot of juveniles in it, and obviously along with the adults, then most people will say, yes, I see similarities in my own family. I see that juvenile kid that's being kind of naughty, that's pushing it a little bit with the infant, and then all of a sudden the adult has to get up, come over, make a point. And then the juvenile goes, oh, I get it. I've been a little bit too rough right now, so I need to back down.
I've just been told
so
off by mum.
They're so similar to us and us learning our social skills.
Yes, of course. And I know that you mainly talk in the book about your work at Columbus Zoo. Was that your first job?
That was my first job in a zoo, yes. And I have to tell you that, you know, this was starting in the early 1980s when the zoo world was really at a point where it needed and was ready for a huge shift. in the way we dealt with captive animals and how we housed them. And I felt and still feel to this day, and I know my fellow gorilla colleagues, my fellow gorilla keepers feel the same way, we were so fortunate to work at an institution that valued our opinion, that valued our thoughts and our commitment to making major, major shifts in the way we dealt with it, with gorillas in captivity. And we were given the freedom and the latitude to implement those changes because they benefited the animals. I think we knew 30 years ago that was a highly unusual management style to work under. And even 30 years later, when I get together with my keepers from that back then, we look at each other and go, we were so lucky, so fortunate to work in an environment like this.
But it sounds like you had a lot to do with the change as well.
Well, it wasn't just me. I mean, it was, you know, us coming in, doing our daily work, and then every morning after the initial feed of gorillas and cleaning their cages, we'd take a break. And we'd sit around the ape house, and there were four of us. It was Adele and Charlene and Diana and myself. And we'd sit around the kitchen table in the ape house, have our cup of coffee, and then start throwing ideas up on the table and say, what if we did this? What if we changed this? What if we changed the diet? What if we added this? What if we did something completely different and actually created a group of gorillas of unrelated animals, and the adults adopted infants that were being nursery reared so that we could get those infants back into a group very soon? And then also those juveniles in the group would learn that they had to adjust their rambunctious behavior in relation to an infant, because we had adults that were in essence the adoptive moms and dads of those infants. And so we were exposing gorillas to what they needed, which was a normal gorilla group, very similar to what we have in our society in terms of, you know, neighbors will correct a kid on a street that's getting a little out of hand. Well, you know, or if a juvenile is a little bit too pushy or whatever, we see that in gorilla society. So we, in essence, created gorilla groups so that they would mirror what we were seeing in the wild. We just did it in a different way, yeah.
And where, Beth, had these gorillas come from? Had they all come from poor circumstances and they were rescued and put in Columbus Zoo?
No, I'll be honest with you, and this does not happen anymore, and it hasn't happened for decades in North American zoos. But many of the gorillas that I began when I first started in 1982 that I worked with, many of them were wild caught, which means they were probably in their 20s, some heading into their 30s, but some in their teens, really in their 20s. And back in the day, back in the 50s and 60s, that's what would happen is zoos would hire someone, they would go out and get a gorilla from the wild, an infant from the wild, and that's a very, very traumatic event, because when that happens, you know, the mother is killed, the father is killed protecting the mother and infant, other group members are killed, and those were the animals that were oftentimes brought into a captive environment in the beginning and sort of the mid-50s and through the 60s. We don't do that anymore, and again, I have to stress this, we have not done that for decades.
Yeah.
But for me, that did inform the way I looked at gorillas, because I knew that many of the animals that I worked with brought with them the trauma of what they had endured from their capture in the wild 25 years or, you know, 28 years earlier. And that made me very sensitive to what they had gone through. And also, I believe, for me, fueled really the passion, myself and my fellow keepers, the passion to make a major shift.
Yeah.
Let's give them whatever we can to make whatever rest of the life that they have on this earth. Let's give them an environment that they can feel comfortable in a captive setting that can best mirror what they would have in the wild. And that's what we set out to do. And again, very fortunate that I worked at a zoo that allowed us at the keeper level to implement those kinds of changes.
Yeah, and you can only try and make those changes by staying working there. I mean, if somebody said to you, how can you work there 30 years ago, that's the reason why, I guess.
I've had animal rights people ask me after I've given a talk about gorillas, but Beth, how could you do that? My answer is, but how could I not do it? Because first off, if I'm on the outside, yes, I could pick at the front of the zoo, but what was that going to do anything for those individual animals that I knew so well? And my deal was, if you can work within the system to make the changes, then do it. Because that's going to matter to these individual animals. And I think that was very important to me as well, as these were very individual animals with very individual pasts and very individual personalities. And I think when you can let people know that, they can relate to that. And the point for me of why I wanted to write this book is I hope that at some point the reader, even for one second, if they would just for one moment stop and say, I didn't know. I had no idea how complicated, how interesting these animals were. Not in relation to us as humans, but simply within their own right.
Yeah.
And how devoted they were as parents, and how fun they were, and how goofy they could be. I wanted people to be able to glimpse that.
And presumably, just a little bit more on the dark side, because of the trauma that you say they went through being captured, and because they're very similar to humans, could they have suffered PTSD?
You know, I can't say that for sure. I will say this, and I think I did mention this briefly in the book. There were moments, and there was one gorilla in particular, Bongo, whom I was especially close to, and there would be moments sometimes where I could just tell he was having a blue day. And so you would quietly work around him, or maybe try and give him treats and then get out of his way. He was thinking. He was sort of lost in his own world. And sometimes during those days, I'd wonder, what are you thinking about? Are you going through memories in your head, or are you just having a bad day like we all do? I can't say that for sure. I can't imagine that they wouldn't, but I can't say that for sure.
Yeah, they probably have memories. Was it Bongo who wanted you to peel an orange, and that's that's how you gained his trust?
Yes. When I first began working in the ape house, it was still open to the public. So in essence, you had the thriller cages, then you had that were barred, and then you had keeper eye on them, plexiglass, and then the public was out in the hallway, and it was quite loud, and the gorillas would get aggressive towards us, the keepers, because we were the closest thing to them, and you know what, so be it. And especially if you were a new keeper, and in this instance, I had been working in the ape house for 6 weeks, and I was warned about, be very cautious, don't get too close to the bars, you know, they can reach out, they'll grab you, and all of this stuff. So one day, I gave him his feeding drum, and I'm standing back from the bars, and I kind of toss him the orange, and he very gently pushes it back, and it drops on the floor in front of his cage in the keeper aisle, and he makes this lovely sort of vocalization, which is a very friendly thing, very nice thing. And I looked at him, and I thought, ooh, is he trying to sucker me in? What's he doing? I don't know what he's doing. I pick it up, put it back in. He picks it up again, very gently pushes it out, falls on the floor. I pick it up again and put it in. And then he pushes it out one last time. And I swear, you know, if a gorilla could do an eye roll, he would have done an eye roll. And what he was trying to say to me is, I want you to peel this for me, and then I'd like you to break the sections off for me and just run it along the bar.
Oh.
And that's exactly what he wanted me to do. And when I figured it out, I was like, oh, my gosh. He let me handle, number one of his favorite food items, and he trusted me enough. And I, in my estimation, I felt like, well, okay, this is him saying, all right, Beth, you're okay, you're accepted. It's not that we're not going to have issues, maybe, but I have accepted you. And it, I really felt that it was one of the highest compliments I've ever been paid.
Oh, I'm sure.
I was absolutely elated.
I'm sure you were, I'm sure. And once you gain that trust, are you able to be alone with them, or is that too dangerous?
Well, we don't go in with them here in the U.S. I know there are facilities, and I studied at one in Holland. There, Hollis does it in the U.K. and Oppenheim in the Netherlands, I believe, and they still go in with some of their gorillas. We don't do that here, but because we worked in such close proximity with them every day, the one thing that is so important to learn as a gorilla keeper is you never presume anything. And I would never in a million years presume to ever touch a gorilla unless they had presented themselves to me. And there's a way of doing that. Bongo would turn his back and sort of look over his shoulder and do this goofy little sort of sound. And I could tell what he wanted me to do was scratch his back, and this is through the bars.
Right.
Or through the mesh.
Yeah.
And then he would want to do a game of chase. And so he'd run from one cage to another, and I'd be in the back aisle chasing him back and forth. But I would never would I presume to ever touch a gorilla or interact with a gorilla unless they had basically said, hey, let's have a little play session.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you're all in. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to be sensible. I'm sure they can be quite unpredictable.
They can, you know, that's the thing. They are wild animals.
Of course.
And, you know, the males are massive. They're 400 plus pounds. Females can run 150, 180 would be a large female. And everybody has a different personality. But again, it's that developing a relationship and never presuming. You know, here's something we would do when in the ape house, and eventually we shut down that ape house to the public. We renovated it and shut it down so that only the keepers could be in there and the gorillas. And the gorillas were so much more relaxed, not having to deal with the public, 24/7. But one thing we would do when we'd walk around the perimeter and the keeper aisle around those mesh cages is we would either talk to ourselves or sing or whistle, because you never wanted to walk up on the back of a cage where a gorilla might be resting or sleeping or interacting with another gorilla and startle them.
Yeah.
And that was just a sign of respect. It's sort of like when somebody would come in your house unexpectedly and you didn't hear them, and all of a sudden they're behind you, and, you know, you about jumped through the roof.
Yeah, of course.
You have to be very aware of that when you're working around them, because if you startle them, they could try and grab you, not out of any sort of maliciousness, but simply adrenaline stuff, really flowing. Or they could take it out on a troop member, another gorilla, because they've been so startled.
And is it true that gorillas nest? Because I was reading about, I think it was Mac, and he was given a bale of hay and was absolutely over the moon with this bale of hay.
Yeah, the story of Mac is they do nest. If you give them wood roll or any kind of, or hay, we would give bales of hay and fill up their cages. They make the most marvelous nest in the whole world. And they do that in the wild. They'll take leaves and branches and create little day nests for napping with their kids or napping by themselves. And then sort of in the evening when they go to sleep, especially the females with youngsters, will go up higher in trees and nests. And they'll create these little nests just out of, again, leaves and branches. In captivity, we do big bales of wood roll or lots of bales of hay. And what happened with Mac was he had been captured from the wild in like 51, and we hadn't been able to give him any nesting material because of the configuration of the cages. And while we were renovating his building, the one that we were going to close down to the public, we had to move him to a temporary space. And that did allow us to give him hay. And one day, my head keeper called me down and said, you need to come down here. And when I walked in the building, she kind of held her fingers up to her lip to be quiet. And I could hear Mac, like five cages down, just rumbling to himself. And he was not a big vocalizer. It was rare that he ever vocalized. And when I walked in front of his cage, Diana had given him an entire bale of hay, and he made the most beautiful circular high nest. And all I kept thinking, and he was fussing with it. I mean, he was literally making a masterpiece while he's chatting to himself. But all I could think of, and Diana and I teared up. We looked at each other. And you know, we just talked about it later, and we were like, was he remembering? Was he remembering? You know, he's been in captivity for 30-some years. Was he remembering what his mother used to do when she used to make a nest with him? It was absolutely one of those brilliant moments that you never really forget.
Yeah, I'm sure it
was. And he was, what was cool about it, he was completely oblivious to us.
He just carried on making his nest.
Yes, he was completely, and the funny thing is he made it so high, the walls of it so high, and he'd step into it and sort of fuss with the middle part, and then he'd step out and get more hay and build up the sides. I've never seen anyone, truthfully, since make a nest like that.
I
wonder, you know, was he somewhere else, truly transported somewhere else?
Yeah. Been an architect in a different life.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Oh, I could talk to you all day on this subject, Beth. It sounds like a completely blessed job to have, but also you've done some great work. I know you rose in the ranks from part-timer to head keeper of the gorillas, and you went on to champion conservation and continues to promote the role of zoos in protecting great ape species in the wild. Are you still at Columbus Zoo?
I'm no longer at Columbus. I was asked to start up a zoo down in Florida, a small zoo called Brevard Zoo, start up their conservation program, and they are one of the best around for a commitment to conservation, as is Columbus, in terms of supporting field work all around the world. And so I did that for 10 years, and then I've been out of the zoo world, although I'm still very involved with focusing on conservation conference that we do every 2 years, bringing together zoos and aquariums and field people so that we can get more support for people in the field that are working the front lines of conservation from zoos and aquariums. Yeah. So I am still very involved in that.
Well, I applaud you. And if any one of our listeners wants to buy the book, we're selling it on our website. It's called Voices from the Ape House. You can hear more stories like this. Voices from the Ape House by Beth Armstrong. Beth, thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
Thank you so much, Selena. I really appreciate it.
Oh, have a wonderful day. Ta-ta. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.